My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, June 27th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this thing, I need you to go over to Apple Podcasts and give this show a 5-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. But if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, I need you to go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival and sign up. It's $3 a month. You're supporting the podcast, and it's hours and hours and hours and hours of bonus content. I believe the first episode on Patreon is me talking about Columbus, my favorite movie of recent memory, my favorite movie in the last 10 years. And I talk about that for a fucking hour plus. Oh man, this is episode 515. I have a super special return guest that you know and love, comedian, actor extraordinaire, Rick Younger. I'm going to share that conversation that I had with him with you in a bit. Right now, I want to talk to you for a few minutes. I am sitting here post-breakfast, actually recording this on Saturday, breaking the fourth wall as usual, putting you behind the curtain. I am post Jimmy Dean turkey sausage omelet. I had some green peppers and some onions and some Tillamook Mexican three cheese cheddar or something. Whatever that Mexican three cheese is from Tillamook, it's fantastic. I had an omelet. I had some hash browns, some Ore-Ida hash browns, put a little salt and pepper on it, put a little American cheese in the middle, let it melt, let it get crispy. A nice meal. So I'm set for most of the day. I'm set till late afternoon, bro. You know, I'm good. I remember my days as a young actor in graduate school in Chicago, Illinois. While I was my second year of grad school, we would have Fridays off. We would have Monday. So we'd be in class Monday through Thursday, and we'd have rehearsals and stuff at night. And I used to work at Best Buy. Most of you know this. And on Fridays, we would have Fridays off, and then we just go to rehearsal when we had a show or something. And so I used to have like a 6 o'clock shift, a really early shift at Best Buy. We would open the store. So we'd open till about 3 or 4 o'clock. And I used to get a nice big steak omelet from IHOP and a pink lemonade and some Texas toast. And it was fantastic. It kept me good for the whole day. And, you know, I think it was like it was IHOP I guess you would call that Boys Town. That was the gay area in, Chicago. 'Cause it was like Wrigleyville, and then it petered off to like Boys Town. And it was like the best IHOP. It was fantastic. Yeah. Good times. I don't know why I just told you that, but so I'm sitting here post-breakfast recording this episode, recording the intro to this episode for this Rick Younger episode. It's been an interesting week. TPS reports by day, and I got to do some stand-up comedy in Morristown, New Jersey, at the Horseshoe Tavern. Ritu Chandra hosts a show. She books it, and sometimes she hosts. Shout out to her. I had a good time. It was fun. Like, I was just, you know, working out some new, feeling good about it, just still trying to put stuff together, and just having fun and trying to figure stuff out, getting laughs, and putting it together. And a really cool thing, two listeners of the East Town and Down, my Mayor of East Town podcast with the great Leah Bonema, we had two listeners come out to the show. They drove from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and came up to the show. They Mike and Mary. It was so fucking cool that they came on a Thursday night and drove an hour plus, maybe, and really fucking cool. They enjoyed the comedy show, and they were like, "Oh, talk to me after." They were like, "Oh, we loved your show, and I wish more people listened to it." Well, I was like, I do too, but what can you do? You can only put yourself out there, but I'm glad that people enjoyed it. I could see like a lot of people seem to enjoy it. So that was really fun to do. So I'm glad it worked out where people liked it and people came to this show. What else? Conan is ended his late night run this past week. And I was seeing that at least it was something that was like he's moving on to do something else and he didn't die. So that's cool. So people trying to remind comedians wanted to remind everybody that they were on Conan. So they put, you know, pictures up with them on the show and shaking his hand and all this stuff. And I noticed I was looking at all this stuff on social media. I was like, man, there weren't that many black comedians on that show. Now, before you get upset, there was not that many. He had a black right. Not that many black people on Conan. And I love Conan. You know, one day it was one day I hope to be on his next project or get to work with him or get to be interviewed by him one day. Maybe one day I'll do something of note and I will get to be interviewed by him. But I mean, he didn't have no black people up. And I seen where a lot of white comics, they've been on multiple times. You know, when you post on Instagram and you don't have room to put all the shit that you've done into one upload, like the window panes, like the Brady Bunch shit, like it's motherfuckers has been on multiple times, still haven't gotten anywhere in their career, but they've been on Conan multiple times and they complain that black people are getting too much stuff, but they're on these late night shows like all the time, but their career hasn't done anything. But they get mad when black people get stuff. But and they've been on so many times. It's just like, wow, that's must be nice. Must be nice, young. You know, I'm not trying to be spicy or bitter or anything. You know what does make me angry is that I see people that are working at the Comedy Cellar that have no fucking business to work at the Comedy Cellar, but it's just about who you know in this business. And sometimes that's in life, and that doesn't just work in show business. It works in real life too. But I do not want to be bitter. I got to do some comedy this week, this past week. And two fans that listened to my podcast came to the show. And I should just be happy about that. And you know what? I should also be happy about doing the Brick City Comedy Review on July 2nd in Newark, New Jersey, hosted by my man, Justin Williams. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be closing out that show. I'm going to bring the heat. I'm going to have a good time. And I'm going to work on my craft as an artist, which I'm proud to be working and doing some stand-up comedy. And so I'll be doing that on July 2nd. I will be on July 9th. I'll be in Albany, New York. Be in Albany, New York on July 9th at the Linda opening for this band called the Nola Knots. And eventually, I think it's going to be on WMAC. Don't let me lie to you guys. WMAC. Rate. It's going to be on like public radio up there at some. Oh God, let me see if I can. Ooh, now you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to be at the Linda in Albany, WAMC Performing Arts Studio, and they're going to record it. And I think it's going to be on public radio at some point, so I can't be dirty. You guys remember that, Christina Aguilera? So I'm going to be doing that. And then I'll be at the Borgata in... I'm going to be at the Borgata July 18th through the 23rd. And I think on the 15th of July, I'm going to be in Brooklyn doing my man Jim Search's show. I could have prepared this, but I didn't think that instead of trying to be negative, I thought I'd just talk about some stuff with the stuff that I will get to do. I'll be on the Trivmatic show at Beer Wax in Brooklyn. So that'll be fun. I get to perform, you know what? And perform and work on material so I can record an album at some point next year. You know, that's what I'm going to work on. I'm not going to concern myself with some of these bum ass comedians, people that call themselves comedians that, you know, get to. Anyway, what else? It's just not been a good week for black quarterbacks, at least RG3. And it's indefensible. Now, I saw people like I think that he has insecurities about, or some issues about being married to a white woman as a black man. And he's on white wife number two. And I think when you get to white wife number two, I think you should just be over it. You should be just think, you know, this is the woman that I love and I'm with her. And so it goes. And so apparently his wife is trying to be a fitness trainer or something. And he posted a video at one point of him like, oh, my wife in her sundress or something. And it makes he starts lifting weights stronger because he looks at his wife. And it was just really weird. But it's just like, damn, I don't know. And then he posted a video of his wife doing squats and he was making fun of the people that were talking about him having a white wife. And then some black women got mad. Some black women that mainly hook up with white guys got mad at him. And rightfully so. It's just like, dude, what are you doing, RG3? You should be thinking about getting a job with a team somewhere. You're good enough to at least hold a clipboard. I believe in you. Good enough to probably be starting somewhere, even though you're not the same as you were when you were younger and before Mike Shanahan like ran you in the ground and kind of ruined your career. And you didn't have anybody to really block for you because they were jealous that because you were getting commercials as a quarterback, as a leader of an NFL franchise. They were mad because you got a fucking Subway commercial and they wouldn't block for you. I don't know what that is, but some of it's kind of, it's bullshit and some of it's racism. But, you know, so I just couldn't defend RG3 on that. I tried to say, you know, my thing, like RG3 innocent. He was trying to buy Equinox for his wife. But it's indefensible. And it is, you know, it's so it goes, man. Just be happy that you're in love and try to support your wife in her business ventures. That's all you need to do. But this social media thing, it's an addictive thing. And I try to stay away from it. I did get a tweet off that did a few numbers during the playoffs. You can find it. It did make some numbers. And, you know, so it goes. Every dog has its day. You know, I've had a few of them. But, you know, it does make you feel good when you get those retweets and people give you the smiley face emojis and all that good stuff. But let's, you know what? Let's just move on. I want to get you guys to Rick Younger. And Rick Younger has become a pal, somebody that I look up to in this business, because he's somebody that just carved his own lane and just kind of kept his head down and having his success and enjoying it with his family and stuff. So it's just always just good to touch base with him. And I said, you know, Rick was on last year. I was like, God, I haven't talked to Rick. And I don't know if it's a male insecurity thing where you just like, I got to talk to somebody and I'll do it on a podcast. You could just pick up the phone and call people, but it was, I wanted to have him on the podcast anyway. And I was just like, let's get Rick back on the show. And we had a good time. And the following is evidence of me having a good time with the great Rick Younger.
They have jazz in this little park area near the house. And I guess a few weeks back, we walked past and we saw the sign, and she was asking all kinds of questions, like, what's this? And I was like, they're doing jazz music, you know? And she was like, you know, so she's asking about jazz and everything. And I was like, maybe we have to come. And so I didn't think anything of it. But like a couple of weeks in a row, I didn't take her. And then she's like with her mother and said, Daddy didn't take me to see the jazz. I was like, oh, I didn't know she was that serious about the jazz. Cause like last week we were near the park, but it doesn't start till 6:30. You don't realize how late 6:30 is for a kid until you're like back in the house from the park and you're trying to get all settled in. And so she said, why didn't we go? I was like, because we were finished at the park at 6 and we had to hang around for a half hour. So I was like, this week I'm taking her. And so we went up there and we hung out for a little while till she wanted to go over to the playground, but you could still hear the jazz from the playground. And then we eventually came home.
How old is she now?
4.
Wow. So she's really into the arts.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my goodness, man. She, you know, she can already, you can already tell she can sing, and she takes dance, takes tap and ballet. But like I say, her wild card is that she's funny. Mm. She's like, like when she watches stuff and she sees something that's funny, she's like very like keen to, you know, that's funny. And if it's funny, she wants to tell me about it. She'll like remember the jokes from shows and then do them on me. And like she got me a couple of times because I didn't, you know, one of her shows that she watches that I like a lot, it's called Bluey. And she did some funny stuff from Bluey that I had no idea was, you know, from the show. And it was really funny. And she really is like, she really is funny. She's like, I don't even have to fake laugh with her. It's like, it's really fun stuff.
That's cool. So when are you going to show her Mo Better Blues?
I'm going to hold off on Mo Better Blues for a minute. But, you know, I'm grading my own show and she's playing my daughter in my show. Cool.
Oh, that's awesome. How is that going?
It's going pretty good. We've done most of the shooting for the pilot, because what we're doing is we're shooting it in as a proof of concept to pitch.
Okay. Yeah.
The last resort is that it will become a web series, but we actually are looking to pitch it. And I have 3 other producing partners. Mm-hmm. 2 of them are a directing duo. They do a lot of commercials. And so they're making their jump from commercials to TV and film. And my project is the one that they're doing it with. My other partner is my writing creative partner, Neil Turitz, who's a director and a writer. And he just has always been, you know, a fan, you know, and a friend, but like, so he's always really believed in me. He's you know, how you see stuff for yourself, but you're like, you don't necessarily have other people who see it and feel it on the level you do.
Right.
And that's what he is to me. It's like, you know, he's like, yeah, I see all of that. What can I do to help make that come to fruition? So we've been working on a few different projects, and this is the one that we're shooting. It's called Rick Younger Presents the Rick Younger Show, starring Rick Younger as Rick Younger.
That sounds good, man. So it's not science fiction at all, huh?
No, it's okay. Like we always say, think Blackish meets Curb Your Enthusiasm. You know, yeah. It's like, you know, I'm playing myself, but you know, also even the title is kind of like, you know, how everybody after Tyler Perry is deciding to put their name in Rick Younger Presents. So Tyler Perry presents, and you know, David E. Talbot presents.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, hopefully when this blows up, one, you'll have a part for me, and two, Charlemagne will like it, because apparently he was not a fan of one of our favorite shows of last year, Black as Fuck. And apparently, I just got read this, I believe it was in Variety, about Kenya Barris. Like, he left Netflix or something, and he's going to start a studio at BET. He's got some big mogul stuff going on. And apparently it came up in the article that Charlemagne didn't like Black as Fuck, and then people got mad because Kenya Barris said, oh, you know, I'd rather for you know, that it's kind of bummed out he didn't like it, but I think I'm glad that Malcolm Gladwell does, and Wes and Wes Anderson does, and people kind of got mad at that. I was like, I'd love to have Malcolm Gladwell like my shit. I mean, what are we talking about here? When this is Black, you know what it is, though? I think it's like Black people that haven't, Black performers, or just people in general. Let me not say Black. Fuck it, I'm going to say Black. Some of it is Black people that haven't gotten their shot yet, and they're jealous. And it's like, if you get your shot, and you probably will get one, then you'll have less time to bitch about what Kenya Barris is doing. And like, if you don't like it, you just like, oh, it's not my thing. I just won't. But I thought the show was brilliant. I thought one of the best things I saw last year.
Yeah, but you know, it's like, I think we've had the discussion about satire.
Yeah.
And Black folks.
Yeah, right.
But you know, like I always say, being Black is hard work. There's so much responsibility that goes with creating stuff as a Black person, creating Black stuff. And you know, because there's so little, we expect everything we do to cover so much and appeal to so many. Like, you know, it's like, we can't seem to grasp as a people that it's okay that you don't like my Black thing. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if you don't think my Black thing represents your Black experience. Doesn't mean it's not a Black experience. And that's what I came away with Black as Fuck, is that there were so many people saying, that's not Black. I was like, no, that's his Black.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like, you know, one of the things that always that stood out for me, particularly when it first came out, people were talking about how he and his daughter communicated.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, you know, you aren't a rich Black person. You know, as a rich Black person, you can't be beating your kids.
Yeah.
You know, you probably shouldn't be beating them if you're a poor Black person, but you definitely
even worse if you're a poor Black person. Huh? Even if you are, even if you're a poor Black person, it might be even worse.
Right, but it's like, at least you probably are amongst a group of people who, because like I think of like when Kirk Franklin went off on his son.
Yeah, yeah.
And how there were so many people who were supportive of it. And I was like, did you hear what he said to his son? I'm like, no, that ain't cool. I don't care how old his son is. I don't care. It's like the responsibility as the father is to be the bigger person, first of all. Mm-hmm. The other responsibility is to create a relationship and an environment that makes it so that by the time the kid is 33, there is no opportunity or possibility for them to address you in such a way that you would have to address them back like that.
Right.
All of that is not the child's fault. And that's a big thing in church, that the wayward child, the prodigal son, they always, you know, so they make it sound like kids just being badass kids, but somehow the person that's responsible for raising them has nothing to do with it. And so it's like, don't nobody get to that point without the parent having first made the, you know, the mistake or the created the problem or environment that makes that happen. And I said all that, you know, to come back to the whole, that whole point that people were making. It's like, there's just a different way that, you know, a person like him would relate to his daughter, you know. And also I find that people who are more affluent tend to, it's like there is a need to rule your household more firmly when you have no control in any other arena in life. You know, so it's like you go to work, you ain't the boss. You go out in the street, you definitely ain't the boss. You know, you come home and you got, this is the one place where I want everybody to, when I say jump, I want them to ask how high. And anything short of that is disrespectful. So, I mean, it's like he created a world that was real for him. And maybe there aren't as many people who can relate to that. But it doesn't make it not real.
Right.
You know, but, you know, people always are ready to, you know, have gradations of blackness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people probably might, you know, people probably don't think I'm black enough because for whatever reason, you know, probably because my children are biracial, you know, that's one reason. It's like, it's a number of reasons, but yeah, so it's like, it is what it is.
Yeah, I kind of, the thing of, it's just like so much hypocrisy going on. Like, it's just weird. Like today, I don't know if you saw it, but you know who RG3 is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's got his wife is white. This is, he's on white wife number two, I believe. And his wife is trying to do like a fitness, like to train people or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he put up a tweet about, oh, you got a white wife, but her butt is nice. Her butt's kind of tight or whatever. And people went apeshit on RG3, and rightfully so. But like, I don't know if he was trolling or not, but he got into it with some of my comedian friends, just going back and forth. But it's like RG3, just fucking chill out, dude. Just try to get on a team. Just try to hold the clipboard this season if you're not going to play, you know? It's like, why are you doing this? You could just say my wife is a fitness trainer and she's, you know, hit her up and that's it. I'm RG3. Hit my wife up. But he went to, there's like, my wife is white. What are you guys? So what, you know? It's like
when you're on white wife number two, you probably a little on edge already, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because I've had a white wife.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that what if I get married again, probably not gonna be another white wife.
Oh shit, let's talk about this.
You know, it's like and not because I got a problem with white wives. It's just, first of all, I'm just like, I was surprised about the first one. You know?
Yeah.
And it's just that I know I've jokingly said to her, I said, it's like we went to our neutral corners, you know. She started dating a white guy and I started dating a black woman. You know,
how did that make you feel?
What that, you know, it's a strange thing because if she had went to another black guy, I'd be like, what was this a thing? But she goes out with a white guy. I was like, what's wrong with brothers?
You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, it's a can't win. It's just like where black guys will date white women, but really have a problem with black women dating white men.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. Like, it's just like a weird, I'm kind of coming to this crossroads where it's like, I don't know. Now, I thought you fall in love with who you fall in love with, but I just think, like, I don't know if white women like me like that. I don't know if they do. I don't.
You know, here's the thing. For the longest time, I was like one of those people who was like, I don't know. I couldn't tell, you know, like when I was in college, I was like, a white woman could do the same exact things that a black girl did. And I would never have picked up that she liked me. I eventually found out that it ain't really that different as far as if they like you, they do the same types of things. It's just a male female type thing. But there is also, I mean, there's so much, you know, I feel like we're more racially charged right now than when I first met my wife,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I do know that when I first started doing comedy, I was in all black rooms. And it wasn't until I started playing mainstream rooms and being in environments where I wasn't necessarily, you know, I wasn't, you know, like I was in the minority. Like, mm-hmm. it was like, you also kind of start to meet and date people who are available to you.
Yeah.
And if you're, you know, I know that for us with our careers are like our lives. It's also very social. So you wind up, you know, you could very possibly be in a situation where you don't come across as many black women as you would if you were doing any other type of thing.
Yeah.
So, but it's like, it seems like now I just happen to, I'm not out at the clubs comedy wise the way I used to be when I was younger. So, I guess most of the time when I'm socializing now, I'm kind of choosing where I go, or I'm going where I'm invited. And so now I'm just like, I kind of live a life where I tend to, if I'm not with my family, you know, as far as my kids or doing activities with my kids and my ex-wife, then I'm usually in an environment where I'm around black people. Like, mm-hmm. Some of the most recent things I've done, like, you know, black alumni events from my school, you know, fraternity, you know, things, you know, and I'm in a black fraternity, you know, and then also just like the pandemic kind of also put you around, you know, you were put into your small circle, and it also made you be aware of, man, who are the people that are important to me? And it's like, you start to, you know, realize the people that you reach out to and reach out to you. And I find that my circle is just a black circle.
Yeah, that's true.
And I just happen to have a period of life where, or, and also I'm in a field where I am not in the majority, but socially now it's like, it's a lot more black than it was when I, you know, like at the turn of the century, you know, I had a more diverse circle.
Yeah, it seemed like it's different. I guess maybe I had dated black girls in Chicago. I dated like who was kind of around, like black girls that did theater.
Yeah.
And I don't think there was any outside people like,
yeah.
And then like stand-up wise, most of them have been like, when I first started, I liked the black girl, but she was like, I've been wronged by too many comedians, so I'm not gonna fuck with you. I don't care if you're good or like, we could just be friends or whatever.
Yeah.
And cause she had started before me. So, but other than that, like, yeah, they're like, and outside, like civilian wise, there have been like a few black girls, you know, but like, even if I'm interested in some that are white, like, it's just, I don't know. It just seems like there's too much to, I was just like, oh, your parents probably wouldn't like me, so you wouldn't like me either. Or you, I don't know. It just, I'd be thinking about that shit. Like,
you'd probably talk yourself out of the game.
I might have, but like, because there's I shouldn't say it. I'll talk to you about it off mic. But yeah, it's like, do I even want to try? And then part of me is just like, maybe there needs to be no more girls, no more women from the past.
Right.
And I think I just need to meet new people and like extinguish the flames that may or may not be around for at least one person.
Right.
You know,
well, I mean, and you know, as a person who's been married and had kids, it's like, it's also a different type of thing too. You know, it's like, I mean, I'm not actively looking for anyone new. I'm seeing someone right now, but it's like, it's just that, the dynamic of what has to be going on for me right now. Like if I were looking, I would need to be with somebody who either has kids so they understand my situation, or doesn't have kids and doesn't necessarily want kids. If you didn't see, and then you're like, the only way I would be dealing with anybody who didn't have kids and wanted kids would mean I'd be dealing with people who were, you know, substantially younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I'm kind of, you know, in that place where I would only be meeting other people who probably have already had kids or either have decided they don't ever want to have kids. And, you know, of course, just, I guess the other thing about wanting to be with someone who already has kids is just that knowing that they have an understanding from experience about having people that are in their lives that are so important that they have to come first.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. It's like, it's easy to say that, oh, I don't have a problem if you have kids, you know, but if you're a person who has the expectation that you want to come first, you probably shouldn't be with somebody who has two little people that should come first. Because if he has kids and the kids don't come first, then
do you want to be with that guy?
You would, yeah, that's a problem too. Like, yeah, I got kids, but fuck them little motherfuckers. You know, what you want to do? Like,
yeah,
he said fuck his kids, so I'm cool with it. No,
right, like, right, yeah,
be cool with that.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out. I'm just trying to get my, I don't know. I'm in constantly trying to get my life together. Like, I don't know.
Hey, man, maybe you need to read this book that I'm reading for the second time.
The Big Leap.
Yeah. It's conquer your hidden fear and take life to the next level. And I need it. It's like the universe is pushing me to move up.
Mm.
And it's like, it seems like there's so many things in my life that are it's a battle. It's like, you know, I guess to use one of those things that have been said before, fear of success.
I think I have that too.
It's just like I'll give you an example. I booked 3 commercials in a row. One day, next day, you know, and
wow, that's awesome.
And you know, that's so unheard of. So like when I booked the first one, I almost was like, you know, in my mind, I was like, oh, well, I'm not gonna book anything else for a while. Then I booked the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, wow, okay, I've done that one other time before that. Okay. So when I had a third audition and a callback that went very well, I actually said it because I was on the set of the second commercial that I was shooting. Oh, was the second? Yeah, I was on the set of the second commercial I was shooting. And I did the callback virtually while I was on set.
Wow.
For the second commercial. And when I finished the callback, I'm talking to a couple of friends because it was the State Farm commercial that
with
that
Drake. Ran,
yeah, that ran during the Super Bowl. And so it was a couple of my friends in the commercial. So they knew I'd gone to a room to myself to do the callback. They said, I said, oh, it went really well. But I probably won't get it. I just shot a commercial yesterday or 2 days ago, and I'm shooting this commercial. Like, nobody books three commercials in a row. And it was like, I was just like, man, really? It's like the book talks about that whole this belief that we have a level of success and happiness that we're supposed to reach. And we may not consciously feel this way, but we subconsciously feel like, oh, once I reach this level of happiness, I can't possibly do any better than this.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of create problems for ourselves. We create conflict. We create things that makes it so that we don't rise any higher. It's called the upper limit problem. So you reach your upper limit. And so it was like, without even realizing, before I even had this book, I was like upper limiting myself. Like, yeah, I booked two commercials, which is cool. That's great. It's like, it's no way that I'm going to get this third one, even though I know I had a great callback.
Can you say what they are?
Oh, it was E-Trade, State Farm, and the third one is the Spectrum commercial that's running right now where I'm playing golf.
Oh, okay. I think I've seen this, the Drake, State Farm, and the Spectrum. I feel like I have.
Yeah. The E-Trade, I haven't even seen yet. I don't know if it's running or whatever, but I know I just got some more money, meaning that.
That's good.
That they're going to run it. Then I also have a Trelegy that's been running like forever. And that one, book a pharmaceutical if you can. It's like those things run like crazy.
That would be nice. Yeah, I have not booked anything, Rick. I just shot two today. Auditions for some small stuff, and I'm working on a friend's pilot presentation or thing that's going to come up this weekend. Ooh. And then the play is coming back, so
cool.
So I'm happy about that. So I'm
because mine isn't.
Well, you did 2-3 years, right?
2 years. I started on the third year, and this is another thing that was like, and let me get back to this whole the universe is pushing me forward, and I'm fighting it tooth and nail.
Why are you fighting? We'll talk about it.
It's not a conscious fight.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, my anxiety has been like through the roof, mm-hmm. waking up just fearful. And I'm like, what am I afraid of? So I'm going to get into all of that. But yeah. What was I saying? So the upper limit problem. So I'm like, limiting myself, not even being aware of it. Then I'm like, oh, what's going on? I'm like, why am I doing that? During the pandemic, I booked 5 commercials and a TV spot. And it's like, when I got Mean Girls, I said it to a number of people, I want to do this 2 years and then move on. The 2 years were up. And it was like, I had nothing else going on. So I was like, all right, I'll sign for another year. And I even said to my agent, but this is the last year. 3 shows into the new year, the pandemic came. It was like, you said you want to do 2 years. You want to do 2 years. Mm. And so, but within the pandemic, like I said, I booked 5 commercials and a TV spot. And I worked on my show, and I'm working on a kid's show that I need to turn into a children's network. With all of that, I'm still like, that anxiety is there, that fear is there. Then in other parts of my life, I had a car, 2008 Dodge Avenger, that my mother gave me when she got rid of one of her cars. So I had a car that didn't have a car note. And I loved it. I was like, man, I'm gonna keep this car forever. And here was, because my plan during year three of Mean Girls was that's when I was gonna get the new car. So I'm like, I held on to the car for this extra year while a pandemic went on. And then, what was it, April? In April, the car broke down when I went down to Maryland. Me and my brothers have been trying to do this brother's breakfast that we do once a month just to make sure that we keep it in touch. I pull up to my brother's house, and fine. Then I need to move my car so that we can leave, and it does some crazy thing where Harley wants to start. So I'm like, I take the car from my brother's house up to my mother's house and try to get it fixed. I'm like, my brothers who work on cars are working on it. They can't fix it. I take it to the dealer. They can't fix it. But meanwhile, I'm like, maybe I should just get a new car. I'm like, no, I don't have a car note. So if it doesn't cost over $2,500 to fix it, I'm going to fix it. And
it was $2,501.
No, they could not fix
it. So they just couldn't fix it at all.
Yeah. It's at the dealer, the people who make the car, and they cannot fix it. And I've already spent some money on the car and they still can't fix it. So finally I'm like, I'm getting rid of this car. So I wind up having to get a new car. And it's a nice car. It's like I'm looking like I'm balling with my new car.
What can you say? What is it?
It's a pre-owned 2016 Volvo S60.
Okay.
You know, my kids have been jumping around on my bed. I gotta buy a new bed. You know, it's like all of these things. I'm like, I have to keep getting these better things for myself.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, because it's a pandemic and I booked 5 commercials, but we're going nowhere, my money is starting to accumulate. You know, all of these, like I said, all these things that are pushing me forward, yet I'm still living in fear. Like, dude, it's all right there pushing me. And it's like, it's amazing the way the mind works. It's amazing how it's like the things you say you want, and you're sitting there, you're looking at it, and they're coming your way. Yet it's like you're fighting it, and it's really blowing my mind. I wish that it was, I know what the issue, I know what's going on. And I wish it was as simple as saying, okay, I receive it.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's like you can say that, but you know when it's not really sinking in, because the anxiety is still there, the fear is still there, you know. And it's like, I've had the car got delivered to me on June 3rd, so not even a full month, and I'm just getting to the point where I'm not getting in the car afraid it's going to break down. You know, afraid that my new car is for some reason not going to still be mine. You know, that, you know, they're going to call me with some reason why they got to take it back. I'm like, I've done everything that's supposed to be done. You know, the title was delivered today. You know, I got the tags. I got everything. It's like, you know.
Did you pay for it outright, or did you just do, you paying a note?
I'm paying a note, but I paid so that the note is like really low.
Okay.
So It's like no matter what kind of month I, like my album royalties every month will more than pay my car note.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So, you know, I am going to get my, I'm going to make the big leap. I am going to get my act together. I'm in the process of getting my act together, but it's been a battle. It's like, it's funny how going to therapy, it's kind of like, you know, how people talk about they don't want to go see the doctor because then there'll be something wrong with them. It's like when I did not do therapy, when I scoffed at therapy, it seemed like I didn't have any problems. Like, you know, I had the best attitude and everything. Then I go to therapy and discover a few traumas and a few disorders. And now I can't not see them.
Mm.
It's like,
I get it. Yeah. I go through that a lot too. Like, I just think I have anxiety about stuff, but I think about stuff. I mean, I'm thinking about like, how am I like going to do the play and work? Cause I think we just started, I think we did 3 or 4 performances in previews, and then it shut down, but it wasn't bad, but it was just like that first week we had a party, like that preview party.
Right.
And it was just like, oh my God, this is fucking it. And then it was just like off. So it's like now back. It's back. So it's coming back in September.
Yeah.
It opens in October.
Like with us, we just got there were a number of our original Broadway cast members who left,
right?
After year two. Mm-hmm. Or within the second year, near the end of year two. So we had a new Katie. We had a new celebrity, Katie. We had, Katie.
Regina. Keenan's show, right? She's on Keenan's joint.
Yeah, the original Regina is on Keenan.
Yeah.
So we had our second Regina came within the second year, but not like, so we had a new Regina, new Karen. We're on our second Gretchen, new Janice, new Damien. So, it was me, Kevin G, played by Cheech Manohar, and Aaron Samuels, played by Kyle Selig. We were the three original principals that were still there. So all of these new people did 3 shows. That was it. And then the show closed during the pandemic. So it's like, I'm talking about Broadway debuts, and the tour is still going on. So it's like they did Broadway 3 shows and then no more. And it's like, they're like, probably, you know how you're like, man, I'm on Broadway. I'm not in the tour. I'm on Broadway. That's, that's better. It's like, but then the tour keeps going. You're like, man, I wish I had just got the tour, you know? It's
like, yeah. But you can't control that. It's just like something that's just out of, like, I kind of made peace with it and it was just like, I got there I don't know if you and I ever talked about that story about it. I know you and I talked before and you were like, yeah, do it. It's Broadway. It's whatever the part is, just fucking do it.
Yeah. you want to get that credit under your belt.
Yeah.
Broadway credit, especially like original cast is also great Broadway credit. Mm-hmm. I fortunately, I did an original Broadway cast in principle. Mm-hmm. So it's like, because once you get in that loop, you're in that loop.
Yeah.
And there's a respect that comes with being on Broadway that is, you know, it's the pinnacle of theater.
Yeah.
And on top of it, there are people who respect theater actors above all other type of actors, and with good reason.
Yeah.
It's like that Broadway schedule is grueling.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I've never had an acting job that was harder. You know, it's like even now that I've created my own show where I am the lead person and I'm in every scene, and that is tiresome.
Right.
But it's like I can show up to shoot and not know all my parts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do that on Broadway.
No.
And I got to recreate it 8 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, for 6 days. It's like, if I mess up, guess what? I'm on stage until it gets straightened out on the spot.
Yeah.
And that's what was scary about my part was that my character had the unique distinction of everything that I said as the principal. I was saying it to a group of people.
Yeah.
So I didn't have like a back and forth conversation with any one person.
Right.
So like if you and I are in a scene together, we got a back and forth conversation. If I go up on a line,
I can bail you out.
Figure out that, you know, then you might say something that leads me to the right thing, or just go ahead at, you know, and say your next line and keep it moving. Whenever I went up on a line, it was like I was about to have a heart attack on stage because I knew that until I figured out what to do next, we're just going to sit here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it is.
It's probably a couple seconds, but it felt like 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. It was a couple seconds, but it felt like forever. Because your brain is a beautiful thing in that it slows everything down for your benefit. But you're like, you're having a long conversation like, I wonder if any show has ever stopped because an actor forgot their line and they just had to stop the show because this person's there. Because I feel like this is what is happening right now, because I am standing here and I'm looking at my fellow actors. I know I'm supposed to say something. I have no idea what I'm supposed to say right now. I sure hope it comes soon and finally it will come. And that felt like I was having that conversation with myself.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously my brain was doing some, you know, self-preservation type stuff.
I've had stuff like that. That's like the biggest fear. That's like one of the reasons why. I mean, if I got the opportunity to understudy for something, I think I did like back in Chicago, but I had to turn it down because I had booked something else, but it was to understudy Corey in Fences. That was like 15 years ago or something, but like, yeah, it's just like you just feeling like a fucking doctor or a firefighter just having to deliver. And it's nothing like, it's easier, way easier than that. But it just, that's my equivalent of that. It's just like, oh shit, you always got to be on the edge.
I guess, you know, I don't know if it's easier is an interesting word choice, but it's like,
but it's relative.
Yeah, in that moment, it's just as dire. It's like, people are gonna die.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So yeah.
Yeah.
And I know one thing, as far as stress and anxiety and things like that, it's like your body doesn't know the difference. You know, your mind doesn't know the difference. It's like I know that. There were a couple of times I called out, not because I was necessarily feeling bad. I was like, but I did have a few times where I had chest pains, and the chest pains were stress related. And, you know, the stress is when you got to be someplace and do 8 shows 6 days a week and you got 2 kids and, you know, you're going through a divorce and all this other stuff. So it's like, but, you know, we also live in a, you know, culture and society that frowns on you taking a break because you need to give your brain a rest, mental health and all the other stuff. And I mean, I think these are all things that also being at least discussed since the pandemic. Like, I hope, here's the thing, when all the stuff went down last year, George Floyd, and people's addressing race, I remember we had a big giant discussion amongst the companies of Mean Girls, both Broadway company and tour, and all the people, you know, creative team people, and Lorne Michaels was a part of, and all this other stuff. And I spoke openly and freely, and I was like, look, I've been Black a long time, and I don't feel hopeful. I hear people talking, but I mean, I said, I'm probably one of the few, maybe even the only person here who is old enough to have been like really aware of everything that was going on with Rodney King, the old Rodney King trial. And I remember that feeling of they finally got it on tape for once. And now we're, you know, it's just right there. It's so obvious. We all thought that this was going to be the turning point. And then for years and years after that, for things to be caught on tape and nothing changed, it's like, I don't get excited and hopeful when people catch stuff on tape.
Right.
And obviously the verdict with that case, he was found guilty, but even now he's trying to find ways to reduce the sentence and all this other stuff. This is the kind of stuff where it's like, they come back later and figure out a way to take some of that back. Just like with the woman who came and they shot the guy in his apartment. Mm-hmm. You know, now he's talking and trying to get her sentence reduced. And it's like, there was a lot of things that have been said about making changes. And there were a lot of things that were said about, you know, making changes on Broadway that addressed how so many of us felt about being Black on Broadway. And it's like, I hope that now that we're coming back that things actually happen, but I don't feel hopeful. Because, I mean, a study just came out that said that, yeah, all that stuff that white folks said they were going to do and promise, they ain't do it. You know, all these companies made these statements and said all kinds of stuff, and they either didn't do it or they did something that looked like it was what they said it was, but upon deeper investigation, you found out that they didn't really do what they said they were going to do.
Yeah. Some of it I just kind of rolled my eyes at last year. Just like, I hope that you guys do better, but I can't. It's a lot of white people that I lost respect for in the, especially in the comedy community, where it's just like, oh, it's like that. And it's just like, damn. Are you getting back to stand up at all?
I still haven't done a live show. I actually was offered a spot tonight, but they.
But you said I have to do the mundane festival.
My daughter was like, we're going to jazz, and I'm like, you know, you can't, it's today is Wednesday, you can't like send me a message Monday night after a decent hour, like at a time where a person like me who has kids is probably asleep. So I get it on Tuesday morning or whatever, or all I know is I had 2 days notice about a spot tonight. And I was just like, I was going to have to do all kinds of rearranging. And it's like, you know, it's hard to go back and say, hey, yeah, remember I said I was going to watch, can you watch the kids on Wednesday so I can run down and do a spot for about $20? Excuse me. So it's like, so yeah, still haven't done a live show. I want to, but.
Yeah.
I also realized that I don't have a lot of friends in the business. It's like, I have created a life and a career for myself that isn't dependent upon the winds of change that occur in the comedy scene. So it's like, I very often don't know who's booking what.
But at the same time though, like, you've carved your own lane, and I look at you like as a vet, where it's like, well, Rick's doing his own thing. I should just worry about doing what I'm doing. Like, because, man, I see these people that are at the cellar now, that are like, they're showing that they take the picture that they're doing on stage. I was like, what the fuck? Are you serious? Like, this person, I know it's like another person's grind, yada, yada, yada. But when they post it and you know you better, it's like,
and you know, the other thing is that one of the main things is, because I had a good conversation last week with Leanne Lord, because I hung out at the Black Women Comedy Festival.
Shout out to Leanne Lord, friend of the pod.
Yeah. And like Joanna Briley, I guess a best way to, she's kind of like a protege of mine as far as producing.
Okay.
She used to stage manage my show, Sold Out Comedy. She'll tell you, it's not, you know. So I like to support her and I go out and whatever. And so I was having conversations with Leanne, and we were just talking about the, you know, how, you know, the turnover with bookers and also the mentality of so many people who do comedy. It's like, it's a one person thing, but it's filled with a lot of people who feel the need to be a part of a group.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, I said, you know, because, you know, I was at the cellar in like 98.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved away, I kind of got out of that circuit. And when I came back, it was like, I never really tried to get back in because of how people treated me, who I knew before I left.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't do well with that type of thing. I don't do well with fake people.
Yeah.
And fake environments. And I don't do well in an environment like the comedy world is, where you have people who, you know, I guess the mentality that makes you decide, yeah, I'm going to run a comedy club. And I'm going to require that people do all of these things that have nothing to do with whether you're funny or not, to feed my ego, to determine if they're going to get this thing. Mm-hmm. This, just like Jeff Singer just lost, just resigned. It's like, I dealt with the whole Jeff Singer's auditioning for Just for Laughs and getting callbacks and having great sets and then being told stuff like, yeah, I think of Rick as more of a singer. Like, did I get up there and sing all of the jokes? Did people not laugh until I sung? None of that is true.
Right.
You know, you just had to come up with a reason to go with whatever your decision was, that you mm-hmm. weren't going to choose me.
Yeah.
But yeah, just being, it's like so full of toxic people. Like, I think of like the Lucian stories of how, I've got enough Black guys. I've got enough, you know, or like, you know, hearing stories about people in those positions, like, you know, telling somebody you're not gay enough, even though they're gay, or you're not, even like, even you're not Italian enough, if you're not like, you know, stereotypical, right, you know, it's like, if you're not Andrew Dice Clay, Jewish guy, being Italian, type of Italian, then you're not Italian enough. And it's, so it's like, I just always knew that that environment just doesn't work well for me.
Yeah.
And I knew that I had to do something different. The price you pay for that is you don't necessarily get known in comedy circles. I guess in a way that is commensurate with your actual ability to do comedy. You know, It's
Man,
like,
that, yeah.
You know, like the amount of people that finally see me do stand up and are like, wow, you're really good. I'm like, yeah, you know, but you know, you know, I'm like, yeah, but I just cannot, I never could be somebody who hung out, just hanging out to get a spot.
Yeah.
I could not be the person who goes to a booker for feedback just for the purpose of saying I talk to the booker. Mm-hmm. I don't need your feedback, nor do I want it, guy who doesn't do comedy and never has, but you book a comedy club.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, it's a crazy world that I just like, I can't, it's like so many things about it that, like I always say, if I could just teleport to the stage, that would be the perfect world. It's like, I love being on stage. I love doing comedy. I identify as a comedian. Like everything that I have and I've done, even though a lot of people know me as an actor more than that, you know, or people might even say, I think of him more as a singer. I mean, all of the major things I've gotten in my career come back to I was a comedian or I am a comedian, and the agents I got, the, you know, and various opportunities are because of that. My booking in commercials is because of my improv experience, which is comedy, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, I've just like, you know what? I'll just do comedy on my terms. And, you know, I'll do my special after I get my own, after I create my own TV show and I decide to produce my own special.
Yeah. I mean, I feel you, man. Like and at the same time, like I'm thankful because I was talking to somebody about this today. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to my parents about it a couple of days ago. Like I'm thankful for when stuff started to open up and I got vaccinated, there were people that reached out to me. I didn't even have to reach out to them. And then the people that I did reach out to, they're like, sure. Yeah. How about this? How about next month? How about, you know, mm-hmm. and like that whole universe thing opening, like my buddy, JL Covan was like, hey man, he told me a couple months in advance. He's like, I got this show in Hartford. I want you to open for me. I was like, let's do it. And I was like, well, I got to get some shows in before I get that one because I ain't bombing at no club.
Right.
And then, like, I said, okay, I'm vaxxed. Everything's stuff is starting to open up. Got an email that day that I said to myself, like, I need to get on stage. I got an email from somebody that I had worked with for a long time that was saying, hey, can you do this show tomorrow? I was like, yes. And then, like I got like club work. I got a week of club work before that show. And like you said, the universe is starting to open up, you know, when you kind of put your mind to it. So I just have to listen to that more and try to be a little more positive. I'm trying to.
Well, you know, and I gotta trust that the spots will come.
Yeah.
And the people, you know, because I just like I said, I don't have the, you know, at this point, I don't know people who book like that. I do see people who have podcasts and things like that. And there's a few people I might reach out to. Otherwise, I'm just have to hope they hear this and say, oh, that guy can talk. You know, but it's like, you know, I also believe that most of the time, I also believe that for me, things happen based on where I'm supposed to be at that given time.
Yeah.
So like for me, it right now, like working on my show is like, okay, you need to do that. And so so the other things aren't coming my way disturbing that. And I'm doing the work with my show.
Yeah.
Now, I did get a call from a brother that I haven't talked to in a long time about doing a show in Connecticut in August. Need to give him a call back. And, you know, you texted me out of the blue and I was like, yeah, I've been waiting for this, you know, like, you know, and not literally like I hope Chris calls me, but like in the sense that, you know, I haven't done a podcast in a while. I'm I'm pretty good at that.
Well, you know, you can always reach out to me, Rick.
Well, I mean, I also think that you got other people you need to get into.
It's, dude, you know me. It's not that you could say, hey, Chris, what's up? Can I do your podcast? It's not like this isn't. It's just a one man operation. Sometimes I might not be thinking.
I mean, because you know, the other thing that happened was like when I was on Broadway, every time I bumped into somebody, they were like, oh, man, you should do this. My show, you should do that. And of course, I wasn't available because I was on Broadway.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the schedule is just like, I didn't really have a lot of time.
Right.
And now, it's like, it's nothing going on, y'all. Y'all still doing your shows? No, nothing. So, like I said, I got a few people I can reach out to. It'll all come together.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I live stream, so it keeps me pretty fresh. So
yeah. Before we wrap up, man, I want you to talk about a couple of shows that you've been watching or anything you've seen. Because the last time you were on, it was like May of last year. And I know we did one on the main feed. Then we talked about Little Fires Everywhere.
Little Fires Everywhere, we talked about it, yeah.
Yeah. What have you been watching this year?
I've been watching Time Wasters.
What is that?
That is a British show.
Okay.
It's basically black time travelers.
Oh.
And let me see if I can. Okay, Time Wasters. It's on IMDb TV.
Do you have to have an app for that, or is it like you just go to their website? How does that work? Is it Amazon?
How do you watch TV? What do you have?
I have Verizon Fios, and I have like the smart TV that like I have like HBO Max and Showtime and all that.
Like, cause I have Fire TV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but
those apps come up.
Yeah, but like, I would go to IMDb and look up Time Wasters. Right there on the thing, it says watch free on IMDb TV, and it's something you can click. So okay, it might be something that, you know. So Time Wasters is something I've been watching. Hacks, did you watch Hacks on HBO?
I loved it. I loved HBO Max.
I did too.
Like that second to last episode got me kind of hyped. When she started like going, talking about her personal shit. And I dug it. I really dug it.
Yeah.
Did you watch Mayor of Easttown?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I liked it. And a lot of twists and turns.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. I mean, some people are just like, you know, all the Kates, you know, are nice. So it's like, yeah, this is gonna be something.
I just finished watching Flack on Amazon with
I'm watching Flack.
Okay, I just finished it.
What else do I watch? Now, as far as regular shows, I watch A Million Little Things. I really like that.
Okay. Oh, that's on ABC, right? ABC.
That's ABC.
All right.
Yeah. It's like I am drawing some blank. Oh, on Stars.
Run the World. Is that good?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, I got to get into it.
And those women are beautiful. Also Blind Spotting with Jasmine Stevens Jones.
That did start up. Yeah.
Yeah, Helen Hunt is on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The Chi.
Yeah, I think it's kind of running its course now. Do you think?
I just like watching black people.
So. I do too, but I just wonder like, where else are they gonna go with it? It was cool to see Jason Weaver in it.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, I guess
the other thing is that I'm also just like, when I keep watching stuff and people that I know, and like, it's like, I feel like my class is graduating. Like the guys that I used to audition with all the time are getting major roles and stuff. So Curtis Cook, who plays the mayor.
Duda. Yeah, he's an asshole.
Yeah. I used to.
Not in real life, just in the show.
Right, right. It's like we used to be going out for stuff and auditioning the same things. My other buddy is Rob Morgan. Who's like,
yeah, he's a beast.
And he's in everything right now. Like Rob and I actually, we have our periodic, all right, black man, grown man, brown liquor nights.
Oh, really?
So yeah, last time we last hung out, I think it was it March 5th, right before the pandemic?
Like, yeah.
Because it was near my birthday. So we got together and we went and got drinks and food on 9th Avenue. And then we were actually talking about getting together and rolling down to Maryland, and then this whole thing happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like, it's all for me. It's reassuring when I see that, because I'm like, yeah, it's like mine is my time is here. And I'm liking the things that I've been booking as far as my guest spots on TV shows.
Yeah.
Like Mezzo Mike was a lot of fun.
That was really funny.
A really funny and, memorable character. And I just shot an episode back in March. So for season two of The Other Two, which is on HBO Max. That's a good show.
Yeah. I've seen. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. I shot that. And then I was like, when I saw it and I checked it out, and I was like, oh my goodness, it was so funny. And I was like glad, because I was like, you want to be in part of something that's good funny, and funny.
Yeah.
It's another Lorne Michaels thing.
Yeah.
And my episode, I am like the guest of that episode.
Okay.
My character is fake Dr. Ted. I am an actor who is preparing for a role as a doctor. So I go to a hospital and I fake, like, I pretend I'm a doctor. Meanwhile, the main characters is doing the same thing, preparing for a role. And, we find out that I am, a fake doctor, because I confront him about, getting to the ER. He's like, no, it's, and then we start to compare notes about our acting and all. So it's really funny. Episode. That's what's
up. When is that? Do you know when it comes out?
I don't know when it's coming out, but they just put up season one of The Other Two on HBO Max and said season two will be coming soon. So,
because it was a Comedy Central property.
Yeah, it was a Comedy Central. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's there. Yeah. That's a funny show. I like that show.
Did you watch the Michael Che show?
Yeah. Yeah. I watched it all in one day. My favorite was the first episode where with his, the arc of him, like trying to be getting stuck in the elevator and then her not letting him in. I was like,
I auditioned several times for that one, and every part that I auditioned for, it was like, I totally could see, it's like, this is how I feel about black shows and black people hooking their friends up. I'm like, do it.
Yes. Yeah.
I'll be doing the same. Like in my show, I cast two of my friends to play my manager and my ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
you can't be mad. Like I wasn't,
it's
really
like, right. It's like, we don't have enough stuff for us to be mad about stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, cause here's the thing. And I say this to people all the time. Nobody's going to hook you up to their detriment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, he used people that were his friends, but they could do the job.
Right, right.
I know, all things being equal, if my buddy can do the part and somebody else can do the part that I don't know, I'm going to give it to my buddy.
Yeah. I had that happen on another show. I read for something and they had like a pilot presentation. And I was like, oh, why don't they just get that guy? And then they got another person that was one of their friends, and then they wanted me to read for something else. So the casting directors liked me, but they just, I was like, oh, they went with their friends. There's nothing I can do about that.
Yeah.
I can't control that.
Now I do. I don't feel the same way when white people do it though. Well, be honest. Well, here's the thing.
Because
first of all, if I'm up for a part, you know, it's like, you know, most of them don't really have a lot of black friends.
No.
As liberal as people in the arts
say they are, they're not.
It's like when the push comes to shove, not a lot of them have real black friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, I mean, I've felt that way about a few things that, you know, that people who are white, who I'm become affiliated with, had me auditioning for stuff where I'm like, you could have gave me that part.
Yeah.
I understand in situations, if you had me auditioning to play, you know, a lead role, that's one thing. But if it's a wacky, zany thing where you want me to be funny, you know I'm funny. You spent an extensive time around me being funny.
Mm-hmm.
Don't. Yeah, give me that part. You know.
Yeah. Hey, come in.
You do that. You do that for your white friends.
Come in and do this for me. Yeah. Oh yeah.
But you also consider them your friends more so than you consider me your friend. So.
Mm-hmm. I overstand. I totally get it. Well, I think. Well, we'll try to end it on a lighter. It's real though. It's real.
Yeah.
I think I just have to be more at peace with that stuff. I was just like, that's their friends, and they're gonna put their friends in the show, and
yeah,
it's nothing I can do. It's just like, you know, my manager's like, oh, the cast of directors, they like you a lot. And it did take a long time for me to make my rounds and for them to actually know who I am and all that stuff. So,
And that's the thing. It's like with so many people, it's like we're one role away from life changing.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's always good if somebody like can be your angel, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's not a lot of, black folks don't have a lot of angels. We usually only, our only angels are usually black people. And the other thing about it is that historically, we have been pitted against each other to the point where there are still a lot of us who don't want to give up too much.
Right, right.
You know, I know that like when I first started doing comedy, and even before that, because like back in the 80s, it was like Eddie Murphy was everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it gave everybody else the feeling like, oh man, that's the black guy of choice right now.
Yeah.
We got to wait until they decide to give another black guy a chance. And that's the way it has been in the industry. It's better than it was. But there still is a lot of, we're going to give all the stuff to the select, you know, small group of black people right now that we like. Mm-hmm. One thing I can say, and not give it up to this generation that has come after mine, is that they seem to really hook their friends up. You know, it wasn't a lot of people, like for my generation, I feel like my generation is a hustling and still hustling generation. I feel like Tracy Morgan and Mike Epps were like the two people that broke out while we were still young. Mm-hmm. A lot of the rest of us are getting it later. Mm-hmm. And, but now you look up and there's like, you know, Issa Rae and her crew. And mm-hmm. then it's like, it's almost like those coaching trees in football. And it's like, okay, now I'm starting to see that, you know, like there are Ava DuVernay's and then the people under her, the Shonda Rhimes and the people under her. And they all, you know, you look up and they're all in each other's things.
Yeah, that's how it's got to be, man. Like, you got to like help people out, and especially if they're worthy of it, you know? Yeah, yeah. It's definitely the thing, man. Well, Rick, this has been great, man. As always, I this was long overdue. I got to have you back on, like, on the Patreon to do like a movie review or something.
I mean, you know, I'm here.
What plug anything else you got going on? Like Rick Younger Morning Show, the breakfast with Rick. What is it?
Yeah. The best thing I can tell you is that, you know, you can find me at Rick Younger on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube.com/Rick Younger, Facebook.com/Rick Younger page, or Google me. I'm the first 6 to 12 pages of Rick Younger on Google. If you follow me at those places, then you will get the chance to check me out on my low budget morning show. I've been really working at live streaming more frequently, but I've been live streaming for 5 years now. So the low budget morning show is my thing. I try to do it when I'm home alone. Mm-hmm. So that means that I don't wind up doing it every day. But if you follow me, you be in the loop. So just follow me. Then that way you also know when my guest spot on the other two will air and all that stuff. And, you know, yeah. Get to know me. Reach out.
There you go. Rick, thank you so much for doing this. Everybody, thank you for listening. Talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.